Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 127 for October 8th, 2012. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Buddy Brandon.
I'm Jostein Gamm.
Oh, y'all are stuck with me for another week.
It's our second annual Guy Cast. We did this last year with Mr. Calvo, and we're going to do it again with Mr. Brandon here. So, yeah.
Yeah, we need smoked
start
meat
talking about
and
sports and things and
big
cars.
TVs and yeah,
things
big old plate of wings.
Ooh,
I was gonna say
I
beverages.
Like
yeah.
Oh, you gotta have the beverages with the big old plate of wings.
Sounds like a plan.
And somewhere partway through, we'll take a nap because that's just what you do.
Ah, absolutely, on a big comfortable couch. Hopefully, with a great big dog next to me.
Nice.
Hey. Thinking of things that we want to look forward to, Microsoft has something coming out very, very soon. In fact, they have several things coming out very, very soon. But it looks like we have some news about Microsoft Windows Phone 8, or so it seems.
Looks like we're going to find out on the 29th of October something. If you're in San Francisco, drop by. Maybe you have to have a press pass to actually get in, I suppose.
There's a launch in New York, too.
Drop by once you figure out where it's going to be, because they haven't said.
Yeah, good point. Not really saying where yet, but... And there's a typo in the name San Francisco, I believe, if I... All right, in this article.
Nice.
That's terrible. That's,
This is like the Windows Phone 8 launch, except that it's not really a launch. It's sort of a launch that's not a launch or something.
Right.
Because it's
you
not
like,
really going to
buy
be
it yet.
So,
or anything.
Many things. You've got Windows 8 itself, which is, of course, Windows 8 and Windows Pro. Windows RT / Surface, which is also that week. The Xbox Music Service, which is Microsoft's answer to Spotify, which is going to run on Windows machines, RT, and Xboxes themselves, with rumors of an iOS and an Android app. So that's coming. Microsoft Office Preview for Windows RT actually happens that week. And I'm probably missing like 65 other freaking things that are coming out that week as well. It's like an onslaught of Microsoft.
Well, I was just kind of sitting here looking at my notes. It looks like AT&T and Verizon and T-Mobile phones are going to maybe be coming along later, maybe November, I guess, something like that.
Yeah, but I wasn't clear on that because they said something about some coming earlier and some coming later and some by HTC. Who knew HTC was still around?
Yeah, good point there.
So HTC and of course Nokia is going to have a couple of phones on AT&T. And
if you don't want a Windows phone, maybe you could buy a BlackBerry 10 phone.
Speaking of things that who knew they were still around? Yeah. BlackBerry. Boy, I gotta say, man, this phone better really knock it out of the park or BlackBerry is just so done. I mean, they can't come out with just a phone that does the thing some... Yeah, okay, it's a phone like an iron. They can't jump on the Me Too iPhone and Android bandwagon. They got to do something pretty amazing. Otherwise, they are so done.
Well, you still got Firefox OS and MeeGo phones to look forward to. So they can all kind of sort of stay down there in the 1% range of adoption.
Right.
You know what's really funny, though, is already to watch something like 24 or other movies from like just 6 years ago that pull out a BlackBerry and you go, oh, how quaint. That's kind of funny and kind of antiquated and dated immediately because we've moved to such a buttonless phone existence.
It's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. I mean, actually a phone with a physical keyboard, is that, are people just don't even care about that anymore? Maybe, we finally gotten used to touch screens. So
feature phones are getting harder to find.
I don't know. There's still, well, yeah. You get either a smartphone or a basic phone, like, you know,
right.
Smartphone, sure. Or like $20 phone that makes calls.
Right.
And that,
right.
It's not really a whole lot of in between anymore.
It was interesting on MacBreak Weekly about a week ago, 2 weeks by the time that this recording comes out. Andy Inoko had said that there was a whole generation of kids growing up on Android phones because their parents didn't want to buy them big, expensive iPhones made of glass that would break and shatter. And so that was kind of the rise of the death of the feature phone, but the rise of the cheap Android phone because it comes with a contract or is easily replaced. And it was something I hadn't really thought about at first, but it does make a little sense. And of course, then it rebounds with what I said before about generationally, you know, iPhone is what my parents have. So it's interesting. If these guys could make phones that are hitting that market, that price point, that race to the bottom that we've talked about with tablets, it's possible. But I mean, good grief. You know, it's everything's so fragmented already. So the fall of RIM and the mediocre rise of, say, you know, Amigo phone or Firefox OS. But we also have to stop for a second and think that outside the United States is a completely different market. And in emerging markets, these phones are actually possibly going to see adoption because of open, you know, open source and easy to graph onto things and stuff like that.
So do you think business people are going to be interested in Playbook OS 2.1 then? That's kind of what
they didn't seem very interested for. In Playbook OS previous to 2.1 so much.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I'm thinking no.
Yeah.
I'm kind of thinking
kind of what I thought.
It's nice to see that there's an update. So it's not a paperweight yet, but I don't know how much longer that would be. I mean, they did seem to be very happy at BlackBerry Jam, which I'm not kidding was the name of their app developers conference.
Wow.
Seriously?
I am not kidding. That was the name of it. So, and they had a great video where they came out and kind of sort of poked fun at themselves about, you know, some of the missteps that they've had over the last year. And, you know, it's all good and the warm and fuzzies. And Microsoft and other companies do that too, where they'll do a video. There's a famous one with look at that Freudian. Ballmer and Gates going out and finding a Sun server on the side of the road and all this other fun stuff. And so there's a lot of those kind of rally the troop videos. Even Steve Jobs did that, where he had people dress up like American people of history and talking about greatness and things that can be done. There's some funny videos if you go looking for that on YouTube from the 80s. So, I mean, it's normal, but I don't know if you can rally those who are left that aren't Twitter or Facebook or apps that you would consider would be on every platform.
Right. Well, I think it's time to talk about Google a little bit. This probably falls into the worst, cheesiest segue I've ever done in the past year. Which, by the way, I'm coming up on a year of doing this podcast, guys. I don't know if you stopped and thought about that or not, but it has. This should be, actually this week or possibly next is going to be a year. So it's been fun, man. I've learned
a
thing or
two. It's fun when you're having flies.
Let me Google search that to get your actual date. Let me go back.
Yeah, exactly.
See, that was a transition.
Nice one.
Yeah.
Nice one. You can just look it up on your wristwatch, maybe, possibly.
Ooh, Dick Tracy.
Yeah. Actually, this is kind of cool. Google has applied for a patent for a wristwatch device, and it's going to have a clear touchscreen or so the images that go along with this patent, say. Going to flip up to have a secondary display. Things like directions, which is kind of obvious. But product information, email notifications, I could probably live without.
Oh, come on. You don't want one more place to check your email?
Yeah, like that's really what I need is one more little ding to interrupt me, you know?
Yeah, is it going to talk?
Oh, good question. Now that's interesting. Yeah.
Think of the wrist gestures you could do.
Yes.
What is he doing? He's having a seizure. No, I'm just checking email.
I'm just reading from cursor is all. I'm all right.
Yeah. Of course, my question really is how, you know, of course, they say that a lot of patents don't actually result in products, and they pretty much put them out there so that somebody else can't do it. But I remember seeing an article not too long ago, and I wish I remembered where, but an article that people don't wear watches anymore. Like they use their phones for clocks and
things. I am actually a good representative of that. I stopped using watches a long time ago when I had that big gigantic numbers on the phone kind of thing. It just made sense. But also I walk around, you know, working on computers and stuff like that. So I stopped wearing it a long time ago because of static electricity. And the interesting thing here, though, I don't know how familiar you are about Google Glass, buddy, because I, you know, because of that Android show and others.
I have a passing knowledge of it. Now, I mean, with that, that has some interesting aspects. It could enable somebody to sort of give you directions from afar, as it were.
Right. And yeah. Right now, Glass is pairing with Android phones. So having a watch is a probably better way of doing things than buying a phone and being stuck in a contract or carrying a Nexus 7 around with you. So if they could take that or use that pairing experience and make it smaller on something like a watch to go with Google Glasses, that makes perfect sense to me. And there is speech involved here with TTS, and Google has its own TTS, and naturally with voice search and Google Now, which is kind of Google's answer to Siri. There's a lot of stuff here, and I am way, way excited about Google Glass for
Google Talking
navigation
Watch.
And for orientation and mobility and object recognition for the blind. I am just way excited about Google Glass.
Well, I would like to be the defender of the Braille watch here in this discussion. I have a Seiko watch that is probably 20 years old, and I do not know. Every Braille watch I had before that was finicky to the point that if a raindrop hit it, it was back in the shop. I had this new Seiko watch not very long, and a friend of mine said, "Hey, check out my pool. See how warm the water is," and submerged my arm into the water, and it didn't miss a beat. Just kept on ticking.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm loving this watch, and I don't know what I'll do if it ever quits, which I'm sure someday it will. Probably just use my iPhone like everyone else, but yeah.
I had a Seiko talking watch, and it was awesome, okay. And it was all metal, and I was actually hooking up a display, a Nintendo display of all things, a Game Boy display, and I wasn't paying attention to where some connection leads were, and I was grounded, thank goodness, but I watched a blue arc go across from the Game Boy display across my watch to a pole that was standing right next to me that I didn't completely recognize, and had one of those moments of, dude, that was like cool. Oh, my watch. After I got over it, I mean, it still talked, right. But it spoke German in weird places, and it was meant to speak German, yeah. That is, but not to speak it in strange places. Like I'd be in the movie theater and it'd be
now I
yelling
actually
out,
remember you know, that Seiko talking watch. I actually remember it now. Never
big,
had
big,
one.
Big speaker on it.
It did have a nice big speaker.
Buddy, you were going to say, did you say that they still make the Braille watch, the Seiko?
They do, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they still make it.
Cool. Very good. My life as I know it will continue then. That's good. Well, let's move into the conflicting reports segment, shall we? I love these. I love them.
Boy, this should be debatable. I'm just letting you know now, kids, get your fast forward button ready, just in case you don't want to hear us battle.
If you're sick of this Apple business, you might want to just
get your finger
a little closer to the 2X
button. Buddy. But here we go again. So apparently, maybe on October 17th, Apple's going to do this media event thing. And reports, according to the Wall Street Journal, for one, say that they're going to talk about an iPad mini, which is in mass production.
And I'm still not buying.
Okay. Literally or figuratively?
I so hope you're right.
Both. Yeah. I think that this is one of those things that the tech media wants so bad that they're going to grab onto whatever little rumor thing that they can. This rumor that says that there's nowhere to put one.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed wholeheartedly.
There's nowhere to put one, and it's just not just price point, but there's just not. I don't see it. But the tech media wants it so badly that that it's like they're grabbing any little thing they can get to say, yeah, we're gonna get this iPad mini. No, I really don't think we are.
Education. It's an iBook reader, buddy.
Yeah, okay.
That was a rumor from about 4 weeks ago. Then it was you know, the death of the iPod, which did not happen last month.
No, it definitely did not. Mm-mm.
So do you think these supposed photos are faked, or do you think that we're seeing something else that we just don't know what it is?
I'm going to play this role. Let me do this first. Let me say this. Conspiratorially, if they were to do one, the thinking that some pundits have said and things that I've watched on Bloomberg and CNBC says that they're doing it because they don't want to leave money on the table. I don't completely buy that, but okay. The other one, and this is the one
like
that
they
I
have, kinda, like yeah, they're really exactly. hurting right now.
You know, a couple hundred billion dollars, you know, what's a little more here or there. This is the one that I do kind of give a little credibility to, which is they could keep the supply chains busy from others trying to do tablets in that space to kind of, you know, put themselves in a competing spot with Apple. And that part, you know, makes sense because Sharp Electronics has kind of mortgaged themselves to the hilt because they had to kind of sort of wait before they could make iPad screens and some changes that had to come across that they're now taking on their bottom line. So if it's Tim Cook, who is pretty sharp about, you know, holding up the supply lines, if it's that kind of thing and that they're doing it to keep out competitors, that to them it doesn't really matter if it sells or not. They're just doing it to make sure that more cheap tablets don't get to the market. That makes sense. I can get behind that theory. But I'm with Buddy here. Logistically, it's just another skew, and it makes it very, 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 very difficult for somebody because, you know, somebody's going to walk into the Apple store and have to make that decision out of all these multiple things, which one of the multiple things do I get when Apple really works better in saying, you want this or this? It's the same thing, just more memory.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't see it. I just don't see an iPad mini or an iPad light or an iPad small or whatever they're going to call it. I just don't.
It doesn't fit, especially if these rumors that we have here in show notes, and we always encourage anybody, if they want to get an idea of what we're talking about each week before they listen, or if they want to know what stories to skip over,
yeah,
like this one, the story here about it being 3G. Doesn't make sense. I've read a story about it not being Retina, which is way counter message. That just does not make sense. For the last year, Apple's been saying Retina is everything. Everything you've ever had before, throw it in the trash or bring it to our recycling centers because it's just a brick. And they've been saying that since the 4S.
That and them putting everything everything on LTE, giving all their other portable stuff LTE, and then saying nope, not this thing. Doesn't make sense. Apple has not historically worked like that.
Correct. And I'm more afraid of an iPad refresh mid-year. Because if you bought that new iPad 3, back in March, and then they say at a launch like this, if it was to happen theoretically, say, oh yeah, and we refreshed the iPad line with the new dock connector and the A6 chip, that would really honk me off if I had dropped 600 or more on an iPad back in March. And that happens. Actually, there is historical, because they've done that with the iPod line where they've kind of just refreshed it mid-range because of whatever, they couldn't get the materials or they decided to bump, or it's just getting kind of conflicted, and that's not what Apple does because as it is right now, there are so many cameras. If you sit down and think about how many cameras are in iDevices between the 5, the 4S, the 4, iPad 3 and
iPod 2. iPod Touch.
Uh-huh. It just gets really crazy, and so I don't know. This just gets worse and worse when I go to the iStore and I see, go ahead and get this app. It's fantastic. It's free. Oh, by the way, if you have any of these devices, don't bother. That list is getting bigger.
I didn't realize until last night's Sarah Spective's Justin Romack was talking about the fact that some apps on iPhone 5 don't take up all of the screen.
Correct.
That
puts them in
weird.
A letterbox. It puts them in a letterbox thing. And the app developer can go back and alter the image file. It's a thing that they can do to make it kind of take up. And you see a lot of that. If you look at your updates lately in the iOS store and you see someone saying compatible for iPhone 5, that's actually making the image fit within the iPhone 5 screen.
Okay, that's good to know.
And there's lots of updates.
Yeah, true. I haven't seen as many as I would have expected. I don't have a ton of apps on my phone right now, but I've seen a few, but I was expecting to just be deluged, but I haven't. I haven't upgraded my third-gen iPod Touch. I actually haven't charged it. I did not realize my wife let her battery run down for so long that when she finally recharged her iPod, she actually had to reset the clock. I didn't know.
Whoa,
that's really low. I didn't know that.
Wow.
It was a long time that she hadn't. No, it was like 1970 or something like that.
Nice.
It was weird. Yeah.
That just proves it, Samsung. Apple developed the iDevices in 1970. I'm sorry.
That's it, right there.
Time travel.
That's all you need.
Just Apple. Apple has a time machine. Apple has a TARDIS. There we go.
Yes. Oh, nice.
Of course, the mundane explanation that it's Unix based. No, never mind that.
Right. That's boring, buddy. Boring.
Which calendar and when does the apocalypse happen? But anyway, Apple can do many things because of name recognition and that powerful, powerful brand. We have an article here that says that Apple is the second most recognizable brand in the world.
Mm-hmm. Behind only Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola.
Ooh. This time
don't spill Coke on your iPhone.
No, I don't think they go together.
Definitely do not spill Coca-Cola.
Nope. They don't.
I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think you need to use an iPod as a stirrer. As a word. Things go bad
with Coke. How about my iPod Shuffle? That would kind of work.
Ice cubes?
You know, freeze your iPod Shuffle and use it in the glass.
I could see an iCube. That might work.
I like that.
But don't celebrate too much because Steve Wozniak said, you know, Apple will decline a little, but it's not going to, you know, fall apart.
He says Apple may decline.
You're right.
This is another one of those not news stories.
I agree. Actually,
this is like so not new. I mean, nothing can go up forever. Apple is like really, if it's not at its peak, I'd say it's pretty darn close. So for it to lose some value or go down in value or name recognition or for something to overtake it someday or whatever isn't going to be any huge, I don't know, thing. All this stuff is cyclical, really. I mean, look, Microsoft in the 90s was like, it was Microsoft, and it was like, you know, now it's Apple's turn. Next, you know, 10 years from now, it's going to be somebody else's turn.
You skipped one, and that was kind of how I kind of mushed these stories together by accident a minute ago, because I was jumping to this point, which is Sony. If you want brand who actually had the number two spot and has declined, who is most like Apple... Sony. And Sony's tried all of this before. Everything that you're seeing with all the interconnectivity with iTunes and AirPlay and whatever. Sony did that with a thing called S-Link, and JVC tried it as well. Sony tried proprietary formats. The MP3 is a fad. Buy this mini disc.
Oh, you forget about Betamax. They did that too.
That was the first of
many. That wasn't their first rodeo.
Yeah, but Betamax actually did see some adoption commercially, so it may not have worked.
Well, no, and absolutely people understood that Betamax was a superior format.
Sure.
But
not sure about mini-disc, but...
but my point is, like, okay, look, Sony, they're not the number two anymore, but they're no slouch, even now.
The company wanted to sell off its television division just to get out because television sales have declined worldwide by 8%. The PlayStation division is eating it. They are buying medical companies and getting into partnerships with Olympus because they are trying desperately to hang on to other markets. I don't know if I could agree with that. I think Sony's in a really bad spot through mismanagement and through stands on like MP3.
Brand recognition wise, with as far as name recognition and so forth, you know, people still regard Sony very highly.
I think Samsung's star is a little higher in the sky. I won't. I mean, this is all anecdotal. We could debate that a lot, but I think.
Oh
Samsung's
no argument, no argument with you there. Samsung absolutely has an excellent reputation, and you know, are definitely highly regarded. Wasn't necessarily true all the time, but yes, absolutely.
If there had been a Sony Walkman MP3 player in 99, just think what that would have done to the landscape. I'm not saying that things wouldn't have played out the exact same. I think it would have been interesting because part of the reason why Sony was loved was their design. And part of the reason why people didn't like, say, the Creative Nomad was because it was a gigantic brick with wires coming out of it. It's just one of those things that in some weird alternate Earth 2 in DC Comics, you know, Sony continued to rise and stayed their dominant all the way from the Walkman on. But again, that's why I said I don't ever, like you said, actually, let me correct myself. What you said, everything is cyclical and everybody comes back and everybody gets about a 7 to 10 year run.
Well, if you think we have had a spirited debate about Apple and Sony and Google, you haven't heard anything yet, because coming up after the break, we have some interesting AT news this week right here on the Serotalk podcast. Are you tired of browsing through thousands of sites just to find the news you want? What about recipes, shopping, radio stations? Wouldn't it be great if there was a single place where you could find all these things and a lot more? There is. Discover Samnet with the widest and most complete content ever assembled for the blind community. And speaking of community, you can use Samnet's voice chat, instant messaging, and users forums to communicate with family, friends, and others who share your interests. To learn more about Samnet, please visit www.serotech.com. That's www.serotech.com. Or call us toll-free at 866-202-0520. We're Serotech, the accessibility anywhere people.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Serotalk 127. Myself, buddy, and the illustrious Mr. Paul's with us. Hey, we're going to get into some stories now that kind of roam a little bit more into the assistive technology field and books. Everybody likes books. Jamie, tell me what's going on with books. I like biscuits and mustard. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, NFB is taking on an e-text pilot program. And this is kind of an interesting thing. It's the University of Minnesota is identified. There are several institutions involved in this. But the response to this is what I find interesting, because they're saying, look, this is experimental. So that means it's not complete. So that means don't hold us responsible for not being totally accessible, because it's not done yet. And by the way, we're a little surprised you're suing us, because we've been talking with you along. I don't quite understand that part of the discussion.
Yeah, they kind of threw that right in at the end, so I'm not sure where that fits in either. But I don't know. Personally, I'm glad to see that somebody's being proactive about this instead of waiting to see if we get accessibility bolted on at the end. Yeah, it's experimental, but I say we absolutely need to remind people that this is important and this is an important consideration, and it needs to be considered before we roll it out, not after.
Mm-hmm. Well, ground up is a good thing when it comes to accessibility, that's for sure.
Of course, let's remind you that that did not happen with Blio.
It did not.
Now Blio has some accessibility built in, but I'm still on board thinking that it may have been too little too late deal.
I have never used Blio. I mean,
it works, but... And there are a lot of books on it, but is Blio going to get the market share that, for example, Kindle or Nook or what have you have?
Audible or any number of open source projects?
I'm thinking not, and they could have.
Right. Yeah.
If they had rolled out with accessibility at the beginning, I mean, not having it at the beginning really, at least in our community, I think, gave them a black eye. Especially because it was like, what was it, like a year late, 9 months late, something like that. But if they had rolled it out when they initially said it was going to come out, and with the promised accessibility on launch, I think things could have been a lot different for them.
Nook, Google Books. I'm sorry, I'm still counting over here.
yeah, man, that's
iBooks. Whatever Microsoft's doing with Barnes & Noble now with a possible
career. While on the one hand, people might cry hypocrisy. On the other hand, maybe it's kind of we learned something today and we're going to be proactive, or we need to be more proactive. And I hope that's what's actually happening, because we definitely need proactive in this kind of situation.
Well, moving on in other AT news, this is interesting, and this is going to take us a while to get through as well. A couple of weeks ago, I mentioned at the end of Freedom Scientific's FSCast 69, they gave us a little tease about something in JAWS that was going to really impact the way we use the web. I think they said revolutionize, but anyway, in the most recent podcast and then subsequently in beta 2 of JAWS 14, they revealed what this is, and it's something called Flexible Web, which I'm not crazy about the name of, but having done some marketing now with Serotech, I realize how hard it is sometimes to come up with really clever names for things. So yeah. I'll give them a little bit of a pass on that one. This is one of those things that if it works, could be kind of cool, but man, are there some opportunities for it not to work.
Lots.
Let me quickly set up what it is. And then, buddy, I know you and Joe have a lot of thoughts, and I'll chime in if I can get a word in edgewise. I'm just kind of joking in there.
No, you weren't. You were absolutely serious and correct.
Oh, fair enough. Good, good. Okay, I was just being diplomatic, but you're right. I'll listen. If there's something I really want to add, I'll fight my way through.
He's wearing a referee shirt, and he just came back from being on the NFL payroll. So, you know, just in case,
yeah.
Green Bay fans, if you want to know what happened, it was all Jamie. Just let me know.
My fault. I'll take the full responsibility.
You should have gotten that call, man. I'm just saying.
So let's just talk about Flexible Web at its best, if it really works like it should. So I go to news.cnet.com, and I decide, hey, I hate all these frames on these web pages because everywhere on the site, it's all these frames or Facebook likes or Twitter or ads. So I can tell Flexible Web, hide all the frames. Then I can maybe tell Flexible Web, okay, at the beginning of every article, I'm noticing there's this tag, this web element called post body. So awesome. I want you to just start reading from the first post body from the top of the page. So that means that whenever I click on an article, and I save this as a rule, so this is going to apply to all of my CNET sites or pages. So whenever I click on the link, it just starts reading the article, kind of the way System Access does when you go to Amazon.com, by the way, and do a search. But that's beside the point. And you can maybe apply these rules to other sites. So you get a really cool rule that works. You can use it somewhere else. Okay, that's if it works. Now, buddy, why might it not work? What do you think?
Well, what happens when the page changes? Like, you know, exactly. they change the page. The webmaster team goes in and totally redesigns the page. Okay, then you
Facebook?
then you're back to square one. Yeah, Facebook. Yeah, please. You're back to square one.
Yeah.
Of course.
The sun came up, which updated Firefox or Facebook.
Or Facebook,
sure.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of this stuff gets done automatically.
A good point.
If it gets done automatically, that could really be a problem, because then it could decide that something that you think is important is not important, one man's trash and all that sort of thing. But like I say, if it's all manual, okay, fine. The other question, if you decide you want to see those things at some point, can you turn it off?
Yes.
And then turn it back on?
You can do that. Yes. There okay, is a that, checkbox that lets you do that.
Okay, good. Good. But here's my biggest problem with it, and it puts me in of two minds of technology like this, and it's sort of the argument that people have made against things like Apple script support and VoiceOver, although it's not, that's not quite the same, nor is the whole labeling graphics for things that don't have label. It's not quite the same, but it's just, it's similar, and you can make a similar argument, but my real concern is that something like this could potentially take the onus off of making pages accessible off of the page authors and put it back on the screen readers where it really shouldn't be.
It's an interesting thought, and I hadn't thought of that as I was considering this and thinking about that. Where my mind went is the poor tech support guys over at FS.
Oh, right, yeah, trying to troubleshoot people's rules.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's going to be a nightmare.
Oh, man.
Working support ourselves.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna take a higher approach here, and I'm gonna break this into two pieces. We've fought American Airlines and other sites for not being accessible, and this leaves a lot open to user mistakes and claiming X is not accessible, whether it be VoiceOver, JAWS, us, whoever. I a lot of issues on the web sometimes are user driven. Or people have not learned how to use the tools that are available, links, list, headings, quick nav, whatever. We as blind users have a bit of an advantage because we get to see invisible text. We get to see certain parts of a web page that are not completely visible to a sighted person. That's it. Again, as a power user, and I'm going to put myself in that spot right there, that's kind of neat.
I hate that term.
I know. and I get why you do. But for sake of the discussion here, for an advanced user, if you will, you're getting parts of the web that you know are there and are working, especially with so much cross-site scripting attacks, with so many ways that the like button is being manipulated right now to get data and culminate data. If you log into Facebook and then it carries on throughout a browser session, there's just so much on the web now that's dangerous. And if you turn certain elements off, you may never know that you've been hit. And you're putting a lot of faith in other portions like antivirus or what have you. And
how can you really turn a lot of that stuff off anyway when the web is now becoming so dynamic?
Well, that's it. Look at Pinterest and infographics and, you know, all the rage of Instagram. The web is going more and more away from text, period. And we're going to have to deal with a lot of things that aren't just, you know, like buttons. You know, that is a bigger issue that I have. And, you know, HTML5 doesn't ratify as a standard until 2014. So you can't go in that direction. W3C keeps updating on what they think is best. And some web developers ignore all of that anyway and do whatever the heck they want. And if nobody's playing by the rules, then how do you get this to work? And again, what information is not there? If you ignore certain headers and tags, or if you ignore certain portions of something, and the trend in web design goes to, well, let me put all the information in this thing you just now don't even see anymore. I see the reason for it. I understand it. But the web is such a crazy place that I don't know how long that lasts. And again, I give them kudos. I think it's great that someone is trying this. Don't get me wrong. I think it is a fantastic idea this from a training perspective. And that's where my second approach is. As an AT trainer, and full disclosure, as a member of the National Federation of the Blind, vice president for the Assistive Technology Trainers Division, I get this, to begin to teach someone aspects of the web and how to use the web. It is neat to be able to turn off all that extraneous material. It makes perfect sense. But at some point, you got to take the training wheels off as a blind individual, whether it be on Google, whether it be on Apple, whether it be on any port of any screen reader, and learn how the web works. Otherwise, you're putting yourself at a major disadvantage to troubleshoot, to understand changes, to understand what is real text, where is the text, where's the information, and what's just an ad. And sighted people have to do that too. And that's the last bit. Sighted people have what we've talked about on this particular podcast called right rail blindness, which is the ability to ignore the ad on the right side of Facebook. And so I don't know, you know, there are filters too, like on Twitter, you can do, you know, hashtag filtering and stuff like that. So blind people can miss things, and so can sighted people. But that was a choice made by the individual to do a hashtag filter.
Yeah, my whole thing here is, okay, I get it. Pragmatically, we need more efficient ways to do this stuff. I completely get that. But on the other hand, we can't really hold ourselves back and put ourselves in this little bubble, because that's not going to, you know, we have to be able to also stay current. And putting ourselves in a bubble like that is, in the long run, I think, not going to do us any favors.
I think we like having stability, which unfortunately is just not possible anymore. In the days of having a note taker and one OS and getting like a Keysoft update every once a year, or even, you know, once every 2 years and stuff like that, and knowing that when I press this button, this happens, that doesn't happen anymore. That truly is not the way things work. We just finished talking about iOS updates with iOS 6 and how all your apps updated. I recently had a conversation with people online about how you can't even do a web/software review anymore because everything changes. And whether it be Ricky on an iPhone 5 interacting with an app and Jamie interacting with it on an iPhone 4S and having a different experience, and then me coming behind on an iPad 1 under 5.1.1, not even on iOS 6, all of us could have a completely different experience. And that's not even getting into the fact that there are some apps that are just specifically displaying one way on an iPad and another way on an iPhone. It's way more complex than this, and I just wish it wasn't, but that's really what it is.
Well, and I won't spend much time on this, but one of the examples that was given in the podcast was just kind of setting up a forum that you visit and that you frequent to make that you know, a little easier to find the posts that you want to read and start reading at the relevant information. So it's possible that it could be used for some pretty mundane tasks, and I'm going to predict not by a lot of people. And I may be wrong about that, but I suspect this isn't going to be one of the most utilized features of JAWS.
It's up to the individual. The cool thing is that JAWS 14 is out in a beta, so you can go play with it right this moment. Form your own opinions. Remember, it is beta software, so the things do change. Be fair, it is beta. Siri's still in beta. And maps, iOS maps. But, you know, give it your own opinion, because you, the user, make that decision, and go try that yourself. And then let us know. Give us an eye report. We'd love to hear what you think about all of this.
Well, from one pretty weighty topic to another, here is another article from the UK. What's up with things over there? I shouldn't pick on folks from the UK. There's some great folks over there. I take it back. I apologize.
Please don't send hate mail. Be addressed to Jamie Pauls at resources@serotalk.com. I mentioned Doctor Who, and I love the UK. Just so you know. Anyway, you were saying.
Hashtag things I shouldn't have said.
There you go.
No. Okay, this headline. Blind people aren't well connected to the internet. Ellipsis.
Blind young people.
Young people, thank you. Blind young people aren't connected to the internet yet. So Julian Daly, who is a part of the Royal London Society for Blind People, wrote this article talking about how that a sighted person is on Facebook saying, you know, I tried to get my daughter not to wear a dress and I lost the argument. But this blind person is saying, I stay home all the time. I can't get out. I can't go anywhere. And I don't want to go with my sister all the time. And this is, according to this author, a snapshot of life for blind people if you are young.
Actually, I think it's a pretty accurate snapshot.
And that is what I've been seeing on Twitter.
I didn't get really out of it exactly what the author intended, I don't think.
I think that's the thing. It's so pessimistic, and there was something they're supposed to be developing, conversational web, which
that kinda seems kind of weird, like, but
yeah.
But what I got out of it really was, yeah, I remember that. I think we've all been there, done that, to a greater or lesser extent. I think that the problem is real. The social problem is real. The technology problem is real. I'm not sure that the one will necessarily solve the other, though. I think, of course, the internet's the great equalizer, and giving blind kids access to something that will get them on the internet and using modern technology that they may otherwise not have access to, I think that's great. I don't think it's going to solve the social problem of getting the blind kid out and hanging out with people, because it's bigger than just, I don't have an iPhone. The problem is more like, the problem that I always had when I was younger was that when school was out, when the final bell rang, I ceased to exist. And I think that we all, at least a lot of us, maybe not all of us, some of us are quite a bit more outgoing and sort of have worked around that. But a lot of us, I think, have really faced that. And I think that's really where the problem is that socially, our peers don't really know what to do with us. And, you know, we're just sort of ostracized, whether we're meant to be or not, whether that's the intention or not, it's what happens. Technology is not going to fix that.
Right.
I'm going to out myself here. I've been extremely lucky growing up, being next to the fourth largest city in the United States and, you know, having opportunities with very well-equipped school districts. So I've been using assistive technology since 1979, be that video magnifiers, opticons, whatever. But I also was born a geek and was president of the Science Fiction Club and was treasurer for the Chess Club. You know, I am an extrovert, but I found groups that I wanted to be a part of that didn't care about whether I was blind or visually impaired. It never even came up in a lot of cases. It was groups that I wanted to be accepted by and work with. And then that led me into doing science fiction conventions and being involved in, you know, security and management, doing things like that. And going out and being a part of things. Now, you know, argumentally, we didn't have a ton of computers back in the 80s, although I did have my Atari XT and I was a part of the Haste group. But you know, there has to be a natural desire to want to do that. And if you haven't been given the opportunity, if you don't know that chicken fingers are not on the buffet of life, I mean, how do you know what chicken fingers taste like? So it comes a lot with parental education, because parents may have made decisions not having any background in knowing what it's like to be blind, to know what you can and can't do. And I saw that a lot when I was with my time with the Division of Blind Services, of educating the parents before you could even educate the child. And that comes with getting parents together, getting them to work with various local resources, be it a lighthouse or a Lions group or something like that. So that way they know that there's an entire world of opportunities. And that's where iBlink Radio, you know, I think is great, because for someone who is newly blinded, they can go and see radio reading services or hear any number of podcasts from any number of people to know that they're not alone, to know that there are other people out there doing some amazing stuff. And it's a great launching off point. But you just got to have that opportunity. And if you've never been given the opportunity, or if your parents were never even aware that there are local opportunities, that can reinforce and compound what this article is talking about.
And don't misunderstand me. I think that technology is wonderful. I'm a fan of technology, and I think that it can really help with a lot of things. I think that it opens up a whole world of stuff for a lot of us. I think that any effort that we can make to get technology into the hands of young blind kids is worthwhile. I think we should do that.
But it doesn't stop the low-tech skills.
It doesn't stop the low-tech skills, but it also doesn't end the getting the technology and getting the kid connected doesn't end. It doesn't end with that. That's kind of a beginning, maybe.
And anecdotally, I have a friend who's a substitute teacher, and he had all the kids in his class were sighted, but he had a kid come up to him and say, "I can text this girl, but I can't talk to her. How do I talk to her?" So, I mean, this isn't necessarily something that's directly related to someone who's blind. This could be also generationally, because all of us on this podcast are no spring chickens, so we can't necessarily go back to what that's like. So there's always the ability to be socially awkward in school, you know? So.
Sure. Oh, for sure. That was me.
Well, I come from a small community, but have been very well accepted in my community. So I have perhaps not faced, every blind person faces some of those awkward social situations, yeah, but probably not to the extent that many people have. And of course, the flip side of that is I literally haven't had the opportunities to use a lot, you know, some of the urban travel skills and that sort of thing that many people use, because you live 6 miles out in the country, you go places by car, you live in a residential area, you even in town, you still travel by bus, and you don't walk city blocks a lot. So there's disadvantages to living in small town USA, but obviously you are surrounded by people who know you a little better and accept you for who you are. And I've been a successful musician in my community and around. So, I mean, it's possible that I'm not recognizing the extent of the problem. I guess the article just felt like, and it was tainted by the Emma thing, I will admit that, the RNIB story that we did a few weeks
ago. So good we don't have Ricky here for that.
It just felt like another one of those, so many blind people are so horrible often, so we're going to do this internet thingy to fix their problems. And so I guess that kind of goes back to where Buddy took us. Talks about how touch screens cost too much for many poverty-stricken blind people, and it's hard for them to use, and, you know, not false statements in some cases, but
perhaps overstated. I think the big problem that I have here is that, yes, the problem is real, but I also believe the problem is a bit overstated.
That's an excellent summation. And it brings us nicely into the next article, which is in commemoration of celebration of ADA week, I'm No Superhero. And this article
I
talks
love
about
this.
This is a good article, in my opinion.
I love this. Every time I've read it, it's just, it has absolutely resonated with me. I mean, this is one of my favorite articles ever.
Right. I can totally identify this, especially, and I love the point that was made, you're such an amazing blind person, but I really wouldn't want to be in your position. I really wouldn't want to be blind, but you're amazing. It's like, that is true. That bothers me as much as, you know, my wife has literally had people say to her as I was on the keyboard playing music at a show, you know, it's so nice that he has that.
Oh,
it's nice that he can do that.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Because that's really all he can do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, she wants to punch him in the face, but yeah. You know,
I'm glad you said it because I was thinking it.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it's, trust me, I've had conversations with her after and tried to peel her off the ceiling. It's like, it's okay, dear.
My favorite is being at a restaurant and having someone look at my wife and say, what would your brother like? I wasn't married or anything. Yeah. And I point down.
Oh yeah.
Down
Melanie.
At my ring
well, it's a lot of fun with me and Melanie because we both have disabilities and she has other physical disabilities. So yeah, it's interesting. It's well, like when we took Alina to summer camp, the cabin counselor is, she asks me, so what relation are you to Alina? Her father? Mm. Oh.
Wow, that's possible?
Yeah.
Wow. I've heard the term blind date before, but I didn't really know it was true.
Wow. Yeah, I always get tense when someone in a restaurant says, what does he want? Because my wife's going to say, ask him.
I jump in real quick. I love that example because it brings up one of my favorite restaurant stories. Melanie and I'm sure that Melanie's parents probably wanted to throttle me. But they took us out to dinner at this TGI Fridays and waitress comes up and she says, and what would you like? And what would you like? And asks Melanie, what would you like? And then the waitress says, what would he like? So I said, mm-hmm. Melanie, would you please tell the waitress that I would like the steak sticks? She says, he wants the steak sticks. Waitress didn't get it. So she says, and how would you like them cooked? Melanie, would you please tell her that I would like them cooked medium well?
Funny.
Who wants the medium well? It was great. And I'm sure that Melanie's parents were just mortified, but we both thought it was just really funny.
I had a server do something one time that I thought was kind of cool, but a lot of blind people might hate it. She walked up and just kind of touched me on the shoulder and said, mm-hmm. What would you like? And I thought that was okay.
I need an adult.
Don't want to be touched. You know,
I mean, they can't make eye contact, right?
Right, so. Exactly. It was a very gentle touch. It was not, that's exactly what she did. It was a physical way of making eye contact. But I just hate the thought of her doing it to a blind person who's like, don't touch me, you know? It's like, dang.
I think that's awesome.
This comes back to you know, theories of, well, if you lose a sense, all the other senses get enhanced and, you know, you have super hearing and super sight or super, you know, if you're deaf, you get super sight apparently, but, you know, super feelings of touch, you know, you become Daredevil from the Marvel comics all of a sudden. And I always try very, very hard to be the good ambassador. So when these things do happen, I try to smile and educate when possible, right? Because you don't want to mess it up for the next guy. Maybe somebody else does need that kind of care or customer service or expects it, right? Mm-hmm. So I try to weigh it evenly in a lot of cases. But when you have someone give you the five questions, as I call it, which is, oh, do you have a dog? If you don't have a dog present, you know, do you hear better or stuff like that? Again, I try to be as kind as I can about that. But there's just some people who put you into that immediate stereotype. And I was in a bar in Austin once, and this girl goes, oh, you're blind. What musical instrument do you play?
Oh, my goodness.
The stereo.
Yeah, pretty much. So, you know, there are all sorts of things that people make assumptions for, either, you know, reinforced by the media or through lack of the opportunity to speak to an actual blind individual. Because we're kept in captivity, I don't know that people really understand that. Getting back to that socialization thing, so I try my best, and some of that actually came from state government having to do presentations and be polite. But I found over time that usually it was better to do the education thing than to do what my first thought was, which was to beat them senseless with my 6-foot cane. but I agree, buddy. This is a great article, and you want to check it out over at sarahtalk.com.
Coming up after the break, the mailbag and, thank goodness, roundabout right here on the Sarah Talk Podcast.
Wildfires burn millions of acres across the country each year. And each year, wildland firefighters battle to contain them. But they can't do it alone. For some communities, it's not a question of if wildfires strike, but when. And a single ember can travel more than 1 mile. As it twists and turns and floats through the air, that single ember can find its way to where you live and can ignite and destroy your home or your community. That single ember can be just as dangerous as the wildfire itself. You can't control where the ember will land, but you can control what happens when it does. You can take action now to prepare your home and your community for wildfire. Get fire adapted. Learn what you can do now to reduce wildfire damage later at fireadapted.org. Prepare, protect, prevail. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council. Learn more at fireadapted.org.
Welcome back to Sarah Talk. And, you know, this is the part where we have lots of letters. We get lots and lots of letters, to quote a David Letterman sketch from years and years ago. And they all appear in
Stan
this...
Stan Freeberg, thank you for all those cards and letters, you folks in the television land.
Even better. I like that reference. They arrive in this great big mothership we call the mailbag.
Hey, watch where you're putting that thing.
I know. It's almost like a forklift. It takes up so much room in here. The first iReport that we have comes from Suzanne, and she talks about her new iPhone.
This is Suzanne from Philadelphia, and I'd like to leave an iReport. I've been a longtime listener and longtime lurker, and I just wanted to let you all know I am doing this on my nice new banking Braille compatible iPhone 5. Yes, I have been able to pair it with a Braille device, and I'm using it. It's just unbelievable. I've been using it since Friday night. It's incredible. The one thing I had trouble doing was doing my voicemail, because stupid me, I didn't realize that you couldn't do it from Wi-Fi. You actually have to do it with the phone enabled. And so I did finally figure it out, and everything is just absolutely wonderful. I'm having interesting time with the maps. There are a couple things that got wrong, but I would say on the whole, I like it. And I'm sure that it will get better with its next release. And good luck with the show, you guys. You do a great job. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you for that. It's great to hear that you are having fun as a new iPhone user and that you're getting accustomed to all the great, wonderful things. It is amazing to me that we can walk into Best Buy and drop lots and lots and lots of dollars on things that allow us to walk outside and immediately turn them on and start talking, be that Apple, Google, whatever. There's just even Uniden talking phones. Those sound horrible, but they do talk.
Wait, Uniden has a talking phone now?
Uh-huh.
I just bought some of those Panasonic ones, and
I've got one, and it sounds absolutely horrible. It is.
That's a shame because.
Oh, I think that's unknown caller.
A double cheeseburger. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
It's funny because the Uniden phone, that multi-handset phone that I replaced with these Panasonic talking caller ID thingies, didn't sound horrible. It was I liked it. It was a nice phone, but then I got these ones from Panasonic, and they're nice phones too. I just wish I knew how to use all the features.
It's like, but some Walmarts have an entire row, and any of them that say large numbers usually end up talking badly. But they're there. There's an opportunity. So, speaking of opportunities, we've got an iReport here from Tyler.
Hi, my name is Tyler. I'm from Louisiana, and I will just listen to your podcast 126. And y'all are talking about tablets. And actually, I've been having a conversation with one of my coworkers. I work at a rehabilitation school here in Louisiana, teaching the blind technology. And we were talking about tablets and actually Braille displays, and how actually all that extra real estate, in my view, is not necessary. I can do the same thing on an iPhone or on a smaller Braille display. So I was just wondering what your thoughts were, and if anybody else had any other thoughts, that'd be great. So I thought that'd pass that on. Bye-bye.
Tyler, let me say this. It's going to be, like we said earlier in the podcast, everybody's going to approach this from a different aspect of what their needs are. Certainly, as a blind individual, having a smaller screen to be able to flick or run your fingers across very quickly is easier to use. Somebody who's low vision may like the iPad or a larger tablet a bit more because they can get the formatting of text better. It's more like a sheet of paper instead of being broken up into a column view. But for a blind individual, having a tablet is cool because it's a big talking piece of paper. And where you put your finger down, it starts talking. That's actually kind of cool. Buddy, you had a thought?
Yeah, you really hit the nail on the head. Melanie loves her iPad. Personally, I like the iPhone better because it's less screen to have to deal with. Mm-hmm. So, and other people have different opinions on that, but that's mine. So there you go. So yeah, it, again, different needs for different people and that sort of thing.
But working in a training lab, as Tyler does in Louisiana, and by the way, my home state, the need is a little greater. Because sure. The experience, as we talked about a little earlier, can be vastly different on a tablet than it is for a smaller device like an iPod Touch or something.
Oh, it definitely is.
Yeah. And definitely. Universal apps run universally, but there are some apps that run differently on the iPad than they do on the iPhone, or some that are just exclusive to iPad that you'll never see unless mm-hmm. you go search for them.
Think of the settings app on the iPad. On the iPhone, whenever you open a section of settings, it takes up the whole screen, whereas on the iPad, your settings categories stay on the left, and then the right side of the screen changes. So you can very quickly change to different parts of the application. So it's definitely a different experience.
Yeah. And with Zoom now working with iOS VoiceOver?
Yeah, Zoom and VoiceOver together, yeah.
That is great for someone who may be low vision, who is used to having an experience on Zoom Text or Magic, or any number of combinations that are very similar to that in the Windows world. So there are a lot of reasons why a blind person may want to look at a tablet. And not only that, if the family can only afford one device, then it may be better to get a tablet so everybody can enjoy sure. the exact same thing. So price may factor into that too.
There's really no reason for a blind person not to have a tablet. It's not going to be a worse experience.
Yeah. Having an iPhone and having a Nexus 7, because the Nexus 7 is a very affordable tablet that gives you stock Android that's going to be updated for quite some time because it's a Google reference tablet, kind of gives you the best of both worlds without you having to make a gamble on a contract and get a phone you don't like. So again, like I said, we can go into Best Buy and spend a lot of money just like the sighted guys now. So it's a great time actually for technology. Jamie has an email.
I have an email from Mike Arrigo, and Mike's talking about iOS Maps, which I actually had a chance to play with a little bit over the weekend.
Did you get lost?
I didn't, actually.
Whoa.
I used turn-by-turn with my wife, and which is kind of cool. I just literally said, get directions to, gave it the address, and didn't touch it. And what I discovered, and Mike Calvo made reference to this on our mobile devices special, which you need to take a listen to if you haven't already, with Lisa Salinger and Ricky Inger.
Sarotalk.com?
Yes, at Sarotalk.com. But what I found was that the Maps voice will read, and then VoiceOver will read. So you know it's the Maps voice because it reads it, you know, Michigan Avenue in a half a mile. And VoiceOver will be like, in 0.5 my Michigan Ave. It's like, oops.
Wow.
I found that turning VoiceOver off was kind of preferable. Another interesting thing that happens is with VoiceOver on, the Maps voice speaks at the same rate as VoiceOver. As soon as you toggle VoiceOver off, Maps goes back to the default voice speed.
Wow.
So some interesting things there. But I'm curious, do we know for a fact that it does not work in walk mode? And why would it not work?
I mean, and if so, how long will that be before they do?
Yeah. Yeah, again, we've said it, Rev 1, right?
Yeah.
First?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gmail was in beta for years.
I saw an article that said that you can.
Well, I can't imagine why you couldn't. Yeah.
No, I saw an email. I saw an email that says you can actually turn on pedestrian directions.
Yeah.
I don't remember how, but I remember seeing one.
But
right, and I haven't played with it, and, you know, as in digging into the settings, I know that just talking to Siri and getting directions is pretty easy, pretty nice.
Well, I think it's great because for years on the Android camp, we've been able to throw that ball up and say, ha ha, look, we have Intersection Explorer and maps and it all works great. And, you know, I don't need Navigon because this works pretty good with some of these things that are out for the eyes free community. And I think it's great that this is coming along. But like you said, and like I just joked about, Gmail was in beta for a very long time. Siri is still in beta. So it's just unlike Apple to do that, where they release something that needs some work. And, you know, this is not easy. I mean, maps are not easy. That's what they're finding out. So I think, you have alternatives. It's not like you're going to be lost in the woods and with no ability to get out. But again, as these things do mature, it gets better every time. So I think that's really interesting. And Mike, thanks for the email. Yes, we've got one last iReport here, and this is a shout-out to you, buddy.
Hi, everyone. This is Robert Dittman, KB5UJM. And if you think this message sounds a little funny, it's because I'm calling you on a ham radio auto patch. I'm calling it to make a point about the wonderful hobby of ham radio, which has opened my world and the countless worlds of many other blind persons and sighted persons and pretty much anyone else who's found the hobby. Ham radio is a hobby which allows you to communicate with other ham radio operators from around the world, including up in space. And Buddy Brennan, KB5ELV, is a ham, and I'm sure there are many other hams. So I wanted to call to let the community know that this is a hobby open to anybody who's willing to take and pass a test. Places you can go for information very quickly are www.arrl.org, or you can go to www.handyhams.org. For those of you who are ham operators, if you're in the San Antonio area, you can use my repeater, which is on 442.35+ with an 82.5 subaudible tone. Or you can drop me an email at kb5ujm@arrl.net. And take care, and hope to hear you guys on the air. Okay, I think that's it. 73, this is KB5UJM. Clear the patch.
Just as a matter of interest, this podcast is being edited by Patrick, KE4DYI, who has noticed that Rob, KB5UJM, is in fact using a Wushan HT. So is now doing the same, just to make that point. And with that, I'll be clear. KE4DYI73, back to editing the podcast.
Mr. Dittman there on the script-to-screen ham radio connection patchy thingy there. That's
hi,
actually
Robert.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I enjoyed
Thank
that.
Thank you for that. I guess could we call it a ham report? I-ham report or I-report?
You know, that whole I-report thing would have worked out a lot better had he used an ICOM radio, and then you could have called it an ICOM report, and never mind.
I don't know. It just seems like we should put that in a different category. That was kind of cool.
I didn't realize the state of police scanners until recently. My father-in-law's analog scanner no longer works, and he needed to buy a digital, and Radio Shack will sell him one for the small price of $400.
I've seen analog scanners that don't have trunk tracking for less than that.
Is it the exact same feed like with TuneIn, so you could just monitor? Because I know TuneIn Radio has sometimes in certain cities, if you do a local content search, you'll run into police scanners for the area.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So there's an opportunity to teach him how to use an iDevice, Jamie. Ha ha.
Well, there you go.
Might be the same as $400, but.
Well, it might actually when it comes right down to it. Who knows? I don't know.
I might not have saved you any money, but you could troubleshoot it. That would be kind of cool.
Well, no. There you go.
You know what doesn't need any troubleshooting?
Roundabout.
Boy, what a transition.
Researchers say Gainesville, Florida is the America's pirate capital.
Yo-ho-ho.
I be taking down a cruise ship, I be.
Yes, pirated copies of Treasure Island. That's what we're talking about. No.
Yeah, that's it. Pirated exactly. Copies of a book that's in the public domain. There
that's
we go.
Well,
there
the you go. First thought wow. I had. Whoops. Yeah, that was nice.
Okay. That won't work.
No, the movie Treasure Island starring Gina Davis, directed by Rennie Harlan,
right.
Her ex-husband.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I'm a wealth of misinformation. What can I say?
Yes. There are 50,000 college students that live in Gainesville, and of course they get kind of fingered as maybe some of the people that are doing this this BitTorrenting here.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's what the kids do.
Yeah, it's what these kids are doing these days. It's pirating music.
Pirating music, yep. Not that I didn't go and do that with VHS and renting movies and stuff. That has never happened before.
That never happened.
Never.
No.
Never at all.
I never gave somebody a cassette tape of an album and used a dual cassette deck. I've never done that.
No. You were all into mixtapes.
This feels like
tapes.
One of those
total mix
news
tapes.
That isn't news stories to me. It's just kind of like, really? You know? Yeah. But if you live in Minnesota, that's the least... What's the right term?
There's less of that in that state. Weird. And I'm not picking on Minnesota, but it seems to me like the place where you're indoors more because of snow would mean you're getting a lot more entertainment. Maybe they are all just Netflix users or something.
That could be.
Because it just seems like at Gainesville, there's a lot of other stuff to do than to sit on the computer, although we've kind of debunked that earlier in the podcast. I like how it all comes back around. Weird. That is just weird. Or broadband speeds are just really, really stoking in Florida.
Yeah, well, you know, it's colder, so the electrons move slower in Minnesota.
Well, that's how that works. Doggone science. For science.
You heard it here first.
So we go from that article to digital music sales set to break records.
Which, by the way, I should point out here that...
nice
people
pun, by the way. Break records.
Said for yeah, right. What is a record? Anyway,
what is a record? Yeah,
people have
iTunes
said for
LP.
Years. Yeah, there you go. that if people had a legal and easy way to purchase music, then they wouldn't pirate it.
Yep.
And now that music is available easily and reasonably priced, and by the way, also mostly not DRM'd. Looks like that's proving the point. So book publishers, movie producers, when are you going to follow?
You know, to continue our history lesson, go back to Napster. Think of what Lars Ulrich said from Metallica, right? Mm-hmm. And now, you know, here was a guy who was in a band that said, we're going to set up a special spot in the stadium so you can copy our recordings onto cassette. It's what that band did. To turn around and then say, oh, by the way, MP3s are terrible and horrible and it takes money from us. And now to come back around to where we are now with iTunes Match and Amazon Player and the ubiquity and the ability to get to this and all of that, it is absolutely crazy amazing. And you know what's even funnier is, I don't know if you guys seen it, but Neil Young is promoting the Ponyo audio format, which is to be as close to analog as you possibly can, but be in the convenience of a digital package. And Neil Young is really pushing the quality of audio. And he's said, look, you know, there's a whole generation that discover analog recordings and cannot believe how better it sounds than the compressed, you know, and I don't want to go too far here because Patrick will just cut me out or edit and tell me how wrong I was about audio codecs. But for sake of argument here and to keep Patrick from editing me, the compressed mushiness of audio that loses the highs and the lows and just hits this one sound. And I think it's awesome. I'm not a huge Neil Young fan, but I'm very much a fan of analog audio, speaking as someone who has 1,200 vinyl records. So I think it's funny that
again,
that
what
comes
is this
back
record?
Around, too.
Well, the CD is 30 years old, for crying out loud, according to this
what
article.
What was your first CD?
Knew?
What was your first CD that you bought? I know what mine
Amy
is.
Amy Grant. It was in the Amy Grant Best Of CD.
Okay.
I remember it well.
I don't actually remember. The first CD that I ever got, somebody gave me a CD of like, what was it? It was like science fiction movie theme
dude,
music.
That's awesome.
It was awesome. It had all kinds of great stuff on it.
The funny thing about that Amy Grant CD is some of the newer tracks are crystal clear, and then some of her older stuff has the hiss, the tape hiss that you can hear. It's great.
Nice.
I bought two on one day. I bought Rush, Hold Your Fire, and Def Leppard, Hysteria. That dates me, I know. Turned around and bought Oingo Boingo, Dead Man's Party soon thereafter, because it just wasn't at that store. But I've still got a lot of my original CDs, and it's interesting because you can hear how some were mastered in AAD, and then some were done in ADD, which is analog to digital, and then analog to digital. Anyway, there's a lot on Wikipedia if you want to get into that. But it's neat to hear some of these remasters. There's a bunch of Deep Purple records that have been remastered recently. Kiss has Destroyer that's been actually remixed by the original analog recordings from the 70s, and Judas Priest just actually released a new Screaming for Vengeance 30th anniversary, which actually has some tracks and an entire live DVD of the US Festival, which is one of their more famous concerts. So it's interesting to see how all of this changes and how some of that stuff can sound so pristine, because even though I had it on analog, I may not have had the best speakers in the world due to cost. So I rediscover things on older recordings now, not just because of the remastering or the remixing, but just because speakers are a lot better now than they were. Wow, there's a cymbal there. Huh. I didn't know that was there.
So I can't tell you what the last CD was I bought. I do not remember.
I don't either.
Yeah.
Okay, I just bought The Dark Knight Returns Part 1 on DVD. I just got that. So I still buy DVDs and Blu-rays. CD, I think, would probably have to be a Foo Fighters Best Of.
No, wait, you know what? I can tell you. I can tell you what CD I got, because mostly I don't buy actual CDs anymore unless there's a reason. Usually I just get a digital download. But no, I got... when Natalie Brown last year was doing her Kickstarter project Indiegogo to do her new CD, I was a funder of that and got her new CD, The Relationship Odyssey.
Coolness.
I think my wife bought a Southern Gospel artist who is blind, by the way. Gordon Mote is his name. And she wanted his CD. So I think she actually purchased that. That would be the last one that I recall that came into our homes.
I still buy special
digital
editions.
Download age is here.
The Foo Fighters came with a DVD, and that's kind of why I bought it. So I will still troll Best Buy every once in a while with my wife or friends and look for the limited edition special one print copies of things like that, because they stick other things in there, and so I will buy on those. But if it's just a regular vanilla release, no, I don't. Yeah. I don't see
there has to be a specific reason that I'll get a CD.
Yeah, craziness. And that's a good reason for going to Amazon and reading that kind of stuff, because it used to depress me to go to the store and you have that one friend who wouldn't read the backs of CDs to you. I want to look this up. Now I could just browse online.
Can't you just pick out the one that you want? Let's go.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, that's why I love online shopping, because with online shopping, I never get to hear some person say, we ain't
interpretation.
Got that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
We Why do you got need that?
I didn't even know you that. Like that group.
But I mean, like, if you ask somebody that works at the store, I need so and so. We ain't got that. Really? Oh, wait, there it is.
Yeah.
To bring it back to Metallica, though, once back in the early 2000s, this guy goes to buy a Metallica CD and the shopkeeper goes, "You do know that these are available online in many various formats for free." like, wow, did I just see that? That was kind of cool.
Well, in our final story for this week, there's a new study that links caffeinated coffee to vision loss.
I am screwed.
Me too, man. Of course, I guess the fact that I'm already blind, I'm just going to keep drinking up.
Just reinforcing it, you know.
Y'all can have mine.
You're right.
If there is a cure, you're just stuck.
Actually, this is referring to the second most common type of glaucoma. And
open angular.
Who knew that Scandinavia drank more coffee than anyone else?
I didn't think that was possible. I thought it was Seattle. They're the ones who were supposedly polluting the area. Wow. I'm addicted, but not this addicted from the levels that are cited in the article that they drink. Apparently coffee morning, noon, and night, and may have an intravenous feed when they sleep.
No kidding. I know somebody like that.
I used to drink a lot more than I do now. I've cut way back, actually.
Now he's just moved on to Red Bull.
Yeah, right.
Man, that's some nasty stuff right there, Red Bull.
5-hour energy, which tastes like Flintstones vitamins all ground up and put into some kind of
liquid. That sounds terrible. I've never tried one, but that sounds awful.
So what do you suppose Patrick was drinking when he did the Serotec disclaimer?
Disclaimers on coffee? No, that's
No, I mean,
now you just made me think of the FDA and putting, Coffee known to cause blindness, you know. It's like Starbucks, you know. But you know what? That would be funny because they could put the Starbucks right next to the LASIK, centers
right there
in the mall, and then have like get a Cinnabon, get a Starbucks, and have your eye shot with this laser. It'd be a 3-for-1
and
pack.
And then go to the lens crafter place and get two glasses for $99.
I make this joke, but there actually was in Pflugerville outside of Austin a haircut place right next to the GameStop, right next to the Subway and the Baskin and Robbins. So they offered the joint pack, which was the geek pack, so you could get your hair cut and actually all the rest of the food. Anyway, so back to coffee. The article says that if you and we thought we'd argue during this podcast. Look at this. Coffee consumption is directly related in this study to actually causing more eye pressure on glaucoma. And as you might know, glaucoma kills the cells on the optic nerve. And by raising eye pressure, you can actually do more damage. And of course, since caffeine is like all about what coffee is, you know, consuming more of that can raise your eye pressure and cause more damage over time.
Right.
I have glaucoma. But I have other eye conditioning issues as well, so I can't say directly that this study makes me want to drink coffee less.
Right.
Certainly, there's something you should talk to your doctor about, naturally, if you are a glaucoma sufferer and you want to know more, or if you have concern. But remember that this coffee might not just be like Folgers. This could be some really
good point.
Yeah, high ground stuff from Jamaica or something like that. So, or it could be somebody walking in and going, hey, give me a couple of espressos in there, too. I mean, it could be a lot of what they're talking about. The article doesn't go too far deep into this, so I think it still remains to be seen. But, you know, it's better to be aware of any of this than not, and then kind of sort of wonder. But you if you have glaucoma, you have to pay attention to that anyway, because if you drink a lot of fluids, that can actually raise your eye pressure as well. And same as diabetics, they have to watch for that for diabetic retinopathy, because if you put sugar in your coffee, or some people still have adverse reactions to sugar alternatives, then that could cause a problem as well. So, and if you drink decaffeinated, then supposedly that gives you cancer. So no matter what, I'm just saying.
You're going to get something.
Yeah.
You're going to get something.
Your choice, how enjoyable you would like that to be, or in Jamie's case, how awake he would like to be.
So that would be a good podcast title, buddy, but I'm not sure how to spell it. Go and get something. To work on that a little bit.
How would eloquence read that? That's exactly right.
I don't know. Eloquence might have a seizure.
Because that's a better podcast title. That's Eloquence on a wristwatch. I like it.
I like it
a lot. Yeah. Well, gentlemen, I believe End of Line has once again met Serotalk. End of Serotalk? That might work.
No,
because
that's
it is scary. The end of Serotalk for today.
Serotalk of Line. Line of Serotalk. Something like that.
Right.
We miss you, Ricky.
Yeah. She's never going to be gone again. She's going to be like, you boys really messed this
Can't
one up.
Can't leave you three alone for a minute.
Look yeah, no happened. Kidding.
Mary Moe and Curly over there.
Goodness. All right. We're out of here. Patrick's going to tell you how to get a hold of us. We really appreciate your comments, and I suspect there are going to be several of them over this particular episode, and we certainly love to hear from you. Until next time, have a great week, everybody.
See y'all next time. Well, sometime.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again with the news next week.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.